On May 22nd, 2019, Katie Crowley was in a horrible car accident, flipping three times, shattering bones, and being left wheelchair-bound for months before graduating to crutches for over a year, having to relearn nearly all of her physical movements. She's a Northwestern graduate and the author of Stepping Up, How Christ Turned My Life of Pain and Suffering into Hope and Joy. And she joins me today. Katie, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Hey, the pleasure is all mine. So just curious, people are going to be wondering this right away. You're a young person. How old were you when this happened?
I was 24 years old at the time, and I'm 27 now.
Okay, got it. Jeez, that is young. I mean, how about we just start right here? For people that haven't read the book, what exactly, and I apologize, we're really jumping into it. I don't know how traumatic it might be for you to do so. I'm really just going to ask you, though. What happened that day? Walk me through the events of May 22nd.
Yeah, sure. So it was just an ordinary day. I was, you know, working my job at a marketing agency at the time. I was going to grad school, just living an ordinary life for a 24-year-old. And I thought that day was just going to be ordinary like any other day. But I happened to leave work. I was driving home like I normally do on the interstate. And all of a sudden, another car went off-roading and came at me, and this happened in a matter of split seconds. Lost control of my vehicle. It flipped approximately three times, and I was conscious and awake and alert this whole time as the car was flipping, and I really thought I was going to die in that moment.
Holy cow. 24 years old. Mm-hmm. You're thinking that your life is over right then and there.
Yeah, it literally like flashed before my eyes and I was like, this is it. This is the end for me. Because the pain was excruciating. The loss of control, the fear, and my car was like smashing and glasses going everywhere around me simultaneously. So I didn't see how I could survive it with the level of pain and fear that I was experiencing at that moment.
You said this car went off-roading. What do you mean by that? I think of taking a 4x4 of some sort and just going mudding or something. What do you mean it went off-roading?
Yeah, so he took the wrong exit, apparently, and he turned around. And I've never seen people turn around on an interstate. You know, you're supposed to proceed forward, but he took the wrong exit and then went into like the grass, mud, dirt area where there's like trees and whatnot. So anyways, he went off cement. And then all of a sudden I saw a car to the right of me out of my peripheral vision that like shouldn't have been there. So yeah, that's what I mean by off-roading. It was improper usage of driving, I guess.
Now, so you're all going this direction, mm-hmm. There's an exit to your right. He starts taking that and he's like, wait a minute. And then he do a 180 and he's facing you now?
I mean, approximately, because this was a matter of seconds, so I don't want to like say exact angles, but since I was just like basically looking forward and driving myself, but yeah, he, it was past what he was supposed to be doing.
Okay. Past what he was supposed to be doing. Are you being careful with how you're facing?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just because, you know, it's my memory and recollection and his, but there were a lot of bystanders that corroborated similar stories to mine to the police, so.
Okay. All right. How old was this guy? Can I ask you that?
I think he was in his 20s. I don't know his exact age.
Got it. And what was the last thing you saw before you started flipping?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just like driving along like normal and just seeing normal scenery as I drove past. And then all of a sudden I saw his car in the corner of my right eye. And so I swerved to try to avoid him, but then I lost control of my vehicle and this was a matter of seconds. So okay. Fast reacting time.
What I hear though, so he never hit you. I don't know. Okay. It's probably hard to tell based on the wreckage of your car.
Correct.
If there was a collision in there.
Yeah, correct.
Wow. Was he okay?
Yeah, he walked away, no issues.
Okay. Now, when I'm just looking at you right now, it seems like there might be like some drama to this situation. Was it unclear? Was there disagreement? And truth be told, I have not read this book yet. I will, certainly. And maybe you cover these details in the book, but Did he say, you know, insurance-wise, was there disagreement about what exactly happened? And
yeah, I guess just since this is a public-facing show, yeah, there was legal ramifications, and so that's why I don't really focus on the specifics of it and leaving that to the courtroom. What I really want people to come away with is what happened after the fact, so that that's what caused this whole thing to begin, but that's not what I focus on in this book.
Okay, and we'll get to that right away for sure. I'm very curious, though. People say when they get into car accidents that time slows down, yeah. Or at least seems like that, I should say. And I hear it's because, you know, your brain knows something ain't right, and hey, life's at risk. Better take in all the information I possibly can. So it appears that time does slow down. You start to notice all sorts of things. I'm sure that you can remember every detail vividly. So what were those details? What was that experience like once the crash started and ended?
Yeah, sure. So as I'm rolling, and I kind of mentioned this, that I thought I was going to die. That was the first thought that came to my mind. And so I actually attempted to try to say the act of contrition, but I couldn't remember it in the moment. And so I just kept saying over and over again, like, Jesus, I'm sorry for my sins. And I said it again and again and again as I'm rolling. And as I'm saying this, I'm thinking about God. I'm thinking about my family that I'm leaving behind. And I'm thinking about that I'm never going to get married. And those were the three things that my mind was focusing on in those seconds, was reparation for my sins and my family and potential husband that I was leaving behind.
Wow. Amazing how those three things can happen to can run through your mind in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
Huh.
It definitely felt slow, like you said. Like, it felt like I was thinking about these things for several minutes, even though it was seconds.
Huh. And you're thinking it while you're upside down, while
yes.
glass is flying around, presumably.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And why were you saying, Jesus, forgive me?
Because I thought I was going to die. And so I'm assuming that I'm going to be seeing God face to face, getting judged for my life, and seeing if I go up, sideways, or down, where my eternity destination is going to be. So I wanted to say I'm sorry for my sins because I want to go to heaven. So that's, and I am remorseful for anything that I did and didn't get to confession or didn't do right by people. So I wanted to have a clean conscience before facing God, if that's what was going to happen.
Now, you're obviously a very faithful person. You're a devout Catholic. Have you always been that?
Yeah. So I was born and raised Catholic, always a part of my family and my life growing up. But I feel like senior year of high school was really the time for me when I, like, it became my own, where I really asked myself these questions of, like, does God exist? And who is God? And is the Catholic Church right? Is another church right? And I grappled with that basically all of senior year of high school. I went to a public high school, so I had a lot of friends that were Protestant, that were atheists, that were agnostic. And so I asked a lot of these questions to myself because it's like, I don't want to just assume something's right. Like, I want to know. And anyways, had a profound experience at Mass senior year of high school. And after that, I was like, this is it. And so was very devout ever since.
Well, hey, we got the time. What happened at Mass your senior year?
I would just say a prayerful experience. When I was praying at Mass, it was actually Good Friday, and just grappling with a lot of those questions and wondering and praying. And I just felt real clarity from God that he's real and he was speaking to me. And just I felt I knew it in my heart, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And I just anyways, after that, it led me to read more. It led me to research all sorts of things, reading the Bible more, reading the church fathers. So then it became more educational after that moment. And I really wanted to learn as much as I could.
I love that. I can resonate with that a bit. And it's so funny how the sureness that you feel when God speaks to you kind of through the Holy Spirit, I'll say, through
yeah.
feelings,
mm-hmm.
a feeling of sureness, that can be more assuring than understanding the facts of the matter.
Exactly.
It's very strange. And for a person like me, I really love understanding things and understanding them in an articulate, wordy sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume you're similar in that regard because you did graduate from Northwestern. You've read plenty of books and you've probably had to be nose deep in a lot of literature. But No, I like that. I like that a lot. And the church fathers, who did you start to read?
Ignatius and a lot of various ones, I guess, snippets of their writing. I guess I would read collections of their writing, not one in depth, just because I wanted to get a wide variety of opinions and thoughts. And just seeing the church, the succession of how it was handed down and into the present day, to know that, like, okay, somebody didn't just like kind of make this up out of thin air, but like, where did this come from? And like, what's the history behind it? And so, yeah, it's very fascinating. And I certainly want to learn more even now.
Fairbury Furniture is Central Illinois' premier furniture store. This family-owned business offers a vast selection of premium furniture items from all of your favorite brands, including Sealy, Best Home Furnishings, Leather Italia, Tempur-Pedic, and Ashley, just to name a few. And right next door to their gorgeous 7,000-square-foot furniture showroom, you will find the Fairbury Furniture Mattress Store, home to all of the latest and greatest mattresses in any and all sizes. Also inside Fairbury Furniture is the popular WC Market, a beloved shop that offers an ever-changing selection of unique gifts and fashionable home decor. So make your home interior beautiful, comfortable, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
Come on down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
It sure is nice to be Catholic, because it's just logically consistent.
Yes.
And you can trace the lineage of every single practice back to its origins, and the origins are pretty darn good. So anyway, this isn't a thing to try to convert people to Catholicism. We're here to hear your story. So after you flip, you eventually stop flipping. What happens after that?
Yeah, so like, I smell like gasoline, my clothes are ripped, I have like blood everywhere, I'm like kind of laying limp in a way, my left leg is like dangling out of where the left window used to be. I noticed people were surrounding my car, and the ambulance came to get me, somebody had called them on my behalf. And so anyways, then I was transported by ambulance to OSF and assessed in the emergency department for my injuries. So instead of meeting God like I thought, I was very much aware of where I was, and taken to the hospital, which I was grateful for. It was a rough journey, and the pain was excruciating. Just driving down there, it seemed like it took 5 hours to get to the hospital. It probably was like 15 minutes. But yeah, so learned what my injuries were. I had contused lungs, and I had multiple broken bones. So my collarbone, my elbow, my knee in four places, my ankle on both sides, basically up and down the left side of my body. And it was just excruciating pain is the best way to describe it, my entire body. But I did not have any head injury. I did not have any spinal cord injury, which is amazing, because my airbags didn't deploy, is what I later learned. So miraculous from that standpoint that I didn't have any sort of head injury.
That's incredible. Your airbags didn't deploy. What kind of car do you have so I can avoid it?
It was my old grandpa's car. So it was a 1999 Ford Explorer. So it had seen its day, and I was keeping it going somewhat.
Oh, I got it. Got it. Okay. So once everyone shows up and they're here to help, to a man and a woman, they kind of come up to the car, right? And they're the ones that call 911.
Mm-hmm.
What was your temperament? What was your attitude? Psychological, like, what was going through your mind? How were you acting before that ambulance showed up? Were you scared? Were you mad about the situation, or were you calm?
I would say scared with a level of calmness, I guess. My pain was so bad that I was alert and aware of what was happening, but I couldn't form a lot of deep thought at that moment. It was more just kind of survival instincts. And so they both were talking to me. They prayed with me, and they stayed by my side and called the ambulance. And I was grateful for that. But yeah, I guess I was fearful. I still thought maybe I would die, or I didn't really know what was wrong with me. I'm like, am I paralyzed? Like, I still just had, like, I guess, feelings of unknown, of like, I still don't know what's happening. I don't know if my injuries are life-threatening, because I'm coughing up blood at this point, and it's searing pain. So I guess just a lot of uncertainty, fear, but trying to remain calm, even though I didn't feel calm.
And were you trapped in the car, or at least immobilized?
Yeah, so I couldn't, like, lift myself and walk out of the car. They had to, like, rip open the door and put me on a stretcher into the ambulance. So I actually, one of the first responder people, I had asked him, should I try to move? And he said no. And I tried to move anyways, which is really dumb. But I couldn't move. So like I tried to like kind of sit up because I mentioned I was like kind of, you know, my leg was out the window and I was slumped. And I tried to like reposition myself and I couldn't. Like I couldn't move my own body.
That had to be frightening.
That was terrifying. And prior to this, like I worked out 6 days a week. I was a competitive dancer in high school and a year in college. And so like fitness and movement was like my whole life. And so to like not be able to like even like sit up was terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they get you into the ambulance and they start taking you to the hospital. And I thought this was really interesting. I listened to your conversation on Catholic Spirit Radio, by the way. Well done. 2-part series. But so you got put in the ambulance and you were annoyed by the guy trying to get your IV.
Yeah. So, that particular, there was a couple guys, in the ambulance with me and they were trying to start an IV. One of the gentlemen, I'm trying to say this nicely, but anyways, he kept cussing every other word because he kept blowing veins on my arm. And now granted, I'm a smaller person. I probably don't have the greatest veins that you can visibly see, but it was upsetting because he just kept cussing and missing. Yeah, well, he's stabbing me with a needle. And so it's like, you know, remain calm while this guy's like cussing, you know, and everything. So that was not settling either. And very painful, by the way. I don't like needles. I never really liked shots or anything like that before this. So yeah, he did not make that experience very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. And then you got to the hospital and I thought this was just so funny. You wanted to go to a Catholic hospital.
I did, and yes.
Were they planning on taking you to one originally anyway?
Yeah.
Just making sure?
I was just making sure, actually. I just wanted to make sure I was going to OSF because I just know that the care is really, well, I thought it was really good there. And I wanted that Catholic environment because I did want to see a priest. Pretty immediately when I got there as well. So I wanted to make sure they were taking me there. They said they were, so.
Mm-hmm. And then you got there. And then they said, let's get her a pastor. And you said, no way. And I'm like, a pastor? Give me a priest. I want last rites. And then you got a priest. But you know what? Maybe a pastor would have been a little more assuring.
Yeah.
But you got to go with the authority given to the priest. But yeah, so you asked for last rites, correct?
I did, because I wanted the healing graces. Again, I wasn't sure if I was still had the potential of dying. I didn't know what my injuries were yet. And even if I wasn't dying, I just wanted healing graces, right? I just wanted that prayer said over me to receive all the spiritual help that I could get to deal with this. And so I asked to see the priest, and unfortunately, he wasn't super thrilled because he was supposed to have left. It was the end of his shift. But
said there was a new episode of Jeopardy on that night.
Something like that. I don't know. I mean, and maybe he had something legitimate to get to. I'm not sure, but was not the most happy that he had to stay over to give me last rites. So that wasn't really emotionally consoling, although the spiritual grace was probably still present.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez. Oh, that does suck, though. Some priests are just lame-os when it comes to some are just terrible when it comes to emotional consolation. And look, I'm a devout Catholic. I understand that priests are incredible, but they have their skills and they have their flaws.
Yeah, depending on you know, they each have their own charism, I guess you can say. And I would say for that particular one that happened to be working that day, it was not really emotional attentiveness was not his skill set.
So what do they tell you then at the hospital? Do they say this is bad or?
Yeah. So, I mean, they basically said I had a lot of injuries, but I was stable, which was good. And, they were worried about a couple, veins, I believe, and arteries. Sorry. I'm not a medical person. So, and so they were concerned, but luckily it was all fine. Basically it was broken bones that had to heal themselves or get surgical repair. So I knew I was going to be into surgery on the knee. That was significant surgery, and then minor surgery on the ankle and potentially the elbow. So I ended up being in the hospital for 11 days, partly waiting for surgery and then recovering from surgery.
Mm-hmm. And then after surgery, you would have to be in a wheelchair for a couple months, right?
Yeah. So unfortunately, because I had the broken collarbone and elbow, I couldn't do crutches because my left arm basically couldn't hold any weight through it. So I was in a wheelchair for several weeks and eventually then got to crutches, but I wasn't able to like walk normally without braces or crutches or assisted devices for a full year.
This had to be a really, really difficult time for you, for obvious reasons, but also you're 24 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're young, you're doing a lot of things, you were a dancer formerly. What was the psychological significance of the whole situation, would you say?
Yeah, so while the physical pain was going on, the mental pain maybe was almost worse, simply because it was a loss of my whole life. Like, I couldn't do anything on my own. My parents had to take me everywhere. Even when I made it somewhere, it was painful, and I, you know, it was just like difficult. And so, yeah, feeling of loss, feeling of abandonment by God. Like, I was a, I kind of mentioned before, I was a faithful Catholic. Why me? Like, shouldn't this happen to like somebody else that's like doing bad stuff, which again is not very Catholic, but it's like you think you're doing, living a good life. And so why would this happen to you? So, I mean, all these questions, frustrations, loss, so many bad emotions to fight through. And so you're kind of faced with two options. It's either turn to God even more and say, I trust you even when this, like, everything is taken from me, I trust you anyways. Or you reject it and say, well, God must not exist because this suffering's too bad. So I had to make a choice.
Did you ever lose your faith?
No, I did not.
It just kind of, you got upset with God and maybe it kind of went up and down a little bit?
Yeah, definitely highs and lows, but it never was gone. And so that's, I guess I want to give hope to people that are suffering currently, whether it's a car accident or anything. Don't abandon your faith when suffering comes, because suffering, unfortunately, will find everybody at some point or another, most likely anyways. And so while my faith definitely had highs and lows and moments where I was, you know, crying to God, like, why, like, take this from me, like, or, you know, please. But it was never gone. It definitely had seasons, though.
Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury is my favorite grocery store, not just in Central Illinois, but in the world. And for good reason. They have the most incredible customer service, friendly carryout workers, an exquisite and affordable bakery where fresh baked goods are prepared daily, and a deli market that is truly top-notch, that provides plenty of seating, delicious food, and even free coffee, if you can believe that. And their canned meats are out of this world. This is all just the tip of the iceberg, though, so if you haven't been here, you are really missing out. Come check out Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury, Illinois, where they've been wowing the customer for 72 years. It's really interesting how immense suffering, physically, emotionally, it can be the reason someone loses faith in God.
Mm-hmm.
They think, you know, especially if I have faith, I'm such a loyal servant of yours, why would you do this to me? And they either think you're a jerk, God, or God, you're not even real.
Right.
But it doesn't quite add up. I think it's just being overwhelmed by the emotions of a moment and the thoughts of a moment, because who else did God cause immense suffering? I mean, Christ.
Right.
Then you look at his most loyal followers like Job in the Old Testament. I mean, he went under significant suffering as well. Everyone will have some significant suffering at some point or another. Tell me what you think of this. I always tell myself, memento mori. That's a Latin for remember you're going to die, roughly. Mm-hmm. And that kind of keeps everything in perspective for me. You know, if you die right now, I, first of all, I want to be prepared to die. I want to be in a state of grace. And if someone else dies, say my mom dies, you know, that is sad for the moment, and I could say, why, God, why? But everyone dies eventually.
Right.
And it's never when you want them to, unless mm-hmm. you're so blessed that you get a, I don't know, they die on a deathbed and they die peaceful and you get to talk to them the day before or something like that. But it just doesn't make sense to me. I think, I don't know. What do you think of what I'm saying right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'd just say amen. When you read the scriptures, it's suffering. I mean, like you said, in the Old Testament, it's persecution. Jesus said, if you want to be my follower, take up your cross and follow me. I mean, that means a Roman execution, suffering. I mean, that's the call of the Christian. Now, granted, we're not like seeking out suffering and love it, and we just ignore problems. But it is a reality that we're going to have to face. And so it's what you do in those moments of suffering that make a difference. But God does promise suffering to those that follow him. And so we shouldn't be surprised when it finds us that are trying to follow him.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think people lose their faith when times get rough? It sounds like a simple question, but maybe it's not a simple answer.
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think, I'm not sure. I think they must just think that a good God wouldn't let this happen to me or to this child or to this person. And he doesn't want suffering for any of us. And before the fall, that was never a part of his plan. Like, oh, I'll just create all these people and then put them through the suffering and see who makes it and who doesn't. Like, that's just a disturbing thought. But I think some people maybe think that. And reality is he gave us free will, and some people use free will to do evil, but some people use free will to do good. And so you have to recognize the fact that it's free will at work in these negative situations or demonic things in certain situations. And so understand the spiritual realities that's happening. But I think people don't think that layer out. I think they just look at their current problems and they're like, well, this just sucks. God must not exist. And they only look at what's right in front of them instead of seeing what does this mean or what the bigger picture might be.
Mm-hmm. And we're so quick to think because this happened, God must not be real.
Right.
And I remember Father Mike Schmidt saying something one time. He said, there's a lot of people, Protestants especially, who say everything happens for a reason, all part of God's plan. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. Why would God wouldn't, it's not in his nature to make someone sin. If no. I sin, if I get up and if I punch my roommate in the face or something, is that God's plan? No, it's not. That's a product of my free will. And so he says, yes, everything happens for a reason. Sometimes that reason is because you are dumb and you make a bad decision. And for instance, this man cut you off or he did a weird thing that caused you to start flipping. It's not like God was thinking, ooh, he's working his magic and made your car flip. I think with the grace of God and by turning to God, we can make all situations better. And that can kind of lead us to think like, oh, it's all part of the plan. Maybe not. Maybe you just made the best of a situation because that's kind of the design of prayer. And that's what happens when you respond gracefully to difficult situations. And I guess I want to ask you, what was your thought process and how did you not get broken emotionally and mentally by this whole situation?
Yeah. So honestly, the Eucharist was my anchor. I had asked for that in the hospital. I asked for people to bring it to me each Sunday. I had also gotten First Friday Communion. Like, I knew that, like, I can't do this on my own. Like, on my own, I would have broke. I would have been an emotional wreck. I'm not that strong. I'm not different than anybody else. But I was just like, I need the Eucharist to sustain me during this time. So that was one thing. Second of all, I did ask for spiritual direction from Father Hinahan at St. Jude. He's a great priest, and he visited me several times, brought me communion, and he gave this image of a rock, and he said there's two ways to mold it. The first is run water over it for several years, and it changes shape slowly. The second is to use a hammer or a chisel, and you change the shape immediately, but it's painful and it's rough, but you see knowledge immediately. And he said, you're experiencing the hammer. And he's like, you have two ways you can go with this, Katie. He's like, and he was a good spiritual father. He's like, hey, you either turn to God and you ask him what he wants you to learn out of this, and you offer up your suffering in the meantime and learn and grow from this, or you turn away from him and become bitter and feel sorry for yourself. So he's like, what do you want to do?
Wow.
Yeah.
Bit of a bold thing to say there. If mm-hmm. you were too soft, you might not have appreciated that.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate it when he first said it. I can say that. I was like, wow, what kind of advice is this? But actually, in hindsight, when I thought about it, let it soak for a few days, I was like, he's right. And I'm like, you know what? I do have a choice to make, and I'm going to choose God. I'm going to fall, but I'm going to rely upon his grace to see me through this and see what does he want me to do with this. He spared my life. He gave me my life back, and now I have a voice. And what does he want me to do with it? Why? What good does he want to bring of this? And so that's where my focus had to be.
I really like what this priest said to you. But I feel like there's an awful lot of people that would be more inclined to tell you, hey, I'm so sorry this happened to you. And they just would do everything for you and kind of pity you and feel sorry for you. But this priest basically told you to not be, feel sorry for yourself. And it reminds me of what love really is. God is completely love. He's the entirety of love. Christ is the same exact thing. And what does Christ do when that person, there's a homeless person and they're blind. And he said, what does he do? He doesn't say, I'm so sorry. You know, God bless you. He says, he spits in dirt and then rubs it in his eyes and then says, stand up and take that crate with you and walk. And then he's like, oh, you know, like that's not feeling sorry for someone. That's telling someone, hey, you have an obligation now. You've been given a chance. Here, you can see now. Go do something with it. Mm-hmm. And that's really powerful that that priest said that to you. And it's kind of funny that I didn't like that, that you didn't like that. And then you're like, well, he's right.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting analogy. Yes, because I think in the moment, right, like you're just like, wow, like how, why don't you feel bad for me? Like, this sucks. Like, this is hard. Like, I'm telling you how everything's so difficult. And it was. And he did validate, like, yes, this is rough. However, like, don't stay in that emotion. Don't stay in that, like, sorrow or that feeling bad for yourself. Like, acknowledge it, but don't stay there because that's not where God wants your focus to be. And so he did kind of wake me up and say, okay, I shouldn't focus on myself. I should focus on what God wants me to do. And like, what is that? And so it was a really strong catalyst, I think, ultimately, for me to write this book down the line. But I didn't see it when he said it immediately.
The tractor cab is the mission control of the entire farming operation. Worn out and outdated tractor cabs lead to annoying discomfort, hindered productivity, dangerous sound levels, and lower resale value. This is why you need to revive your tractor cab with Fair Cab Interiors. Today, we use our vast facility in the cornfields of Illinois to manufacture high-quality custom tractor upholstery for over 750 models from the 1960s all the way through to the 2010s. Our team of product engineers carefully design each new part, emphasizing product fit and ease of installation for anyone to install. We offer acoustical foam panels, ProForm plastic panels, headliners, floor mats, door and window seals, seats, and much more. We carefully monitor lamination quality, use premium grade foam, and utilize the highest standards of raw materials when manufacturing. With our massive inventory and delivery trucks that pick up daily, logistics are a snap. Our call center is manned not by robot answering machines, but real, experienced, and knowledgeable people who will provide you with installation tips, product details, and help with any questions you may have before or after the sale. But don't just take our word for all this. See what people are saying on faircab.com and Google Reviews, where we've earned over 2,000 five-star reviews.
When the time comes to fix up your aging tractor interior, try out the cab interior experts at Fair Cab. Visit us at faircab.com or give us a call at 815-692-3355.
What is your general temperament like? Are you someone who's very tough and not emotional? Are you very emotional and maybe not so tough? What? Apparently, you have a strong work ethic. I'm willing to at least assume that.
Yeah, definitely more emotional and not tough, I would say. So that's why at first it was such a jolt to me. I definitely think I'm very empathetic. I feel things at a deep level. And I tend to do better when people are encouraging and loving towards me because it makes me want to do like better. But if somebody shows me tough love, usually I kind of shut down. So that's why at first when I was really taken aback when he said that, but I think coming from an outside source, I mean, because I know Father, but like, it's not like my mom or dad saying that to me. It was kind of like more of an objective person to say that. Who delivers it probably also makes a difference. And so I think because it was coming from him, I could take it better. But normally I think I would just probably cry and say, oh, great, thanks.
Yeah, screw you, guy. Yeah. If one of your friends came and said that, yeah. Oh, it'd be terrible.
Yeah, it'd be rough. Mm-hmm.
Well, what did your rehab look like? It lasted an awfully long time. What were you doing?
Yeah, so I was in physical therapy for a year. And so that was quite an experience in and of itself. So I had to learn to wean to the crutches and then to one crutch and nothing. And that sounds fairly straightforward, but man, was it. It was brutal. I had to regain all sorts of strength. And the physical therapist definitely, you know, did not show a lot of empathy, which was rough on me. So it was, I had a crazy schedule of physical therapy. I even did aqua therapy for a stint to try to have water exercises help me get more stability and balance back. But it was brutal. I mean, I spent hours, you know, each week in therapy, and then I had exercises at home, and it was not easy to learn to walk again, and it was extremely painful. And I got very frustrated during this time because I was just like, okay, I'm going to learn to walk. And it's like, it was not a simple thing. It was one milestone at a time. Maybe it was getting just from the wheelchair to a chair, and like that was hard. And then like learning to like get on crutches just around my room. I mean, so it was learning how to break down the goal of walking into small manageable goals throughout an entire year.
What did it look like when you got extremely frustrated?
Yeah. So I guess I would say, maybe some tears occasionally. One instance that comes to mind when I was working with one physical therapist, and he had wanted me to go to one crutch after I had only been on crutches for 2 weeks. I didn't do any strengthening exercises yet. And he told me to go across the room and go fetch my crutch. And he like threw it across the room. And I was like, I can't do that. And he was like, yes, you can do it. And I tried. I took about 2 steps on one crutch. I slumped over. My knee gave out. And then I had a PTSD attack because I felt like I caught myself, but I was close to the ground. He also did not have a gait belt on me, was not standing by me. And I caught myself, but that was rough. That was real rough.
Oh my gosh. You said, did you have a pain? What'd you say happened then? Did you?
PTSD. Yeah. So okay. That was something else that I had struggled with from this accident after that happened, was just like when I got a surge of pain, I would have flashbacks of the accident and feeling out of control, feeling that pain. And I would be back in that moment of the accident. And so by me feeling like I was falling and my knee concaving, it like threw me into that. And so then I had to deal with that for several minutes.
That's an interesting thing. PTSD. I mean, trauma, what trauma is, as far as I know, I like to listen to this neuroscientist, Andrew Huberman. You ever heard of him?
I have not.
Okay. Well, he was talking with a psychiatrist about what trauma is. And it's basically when an event overwhelms your ability to cope and understand. So it's just like, well, I've never been in this situation before. This kind of pulls the rug out from everything that I thought I knew. And if you're in a car accident, you know, you're like, well, I'm flipping through the air. There's absolutely nothing I can do. This is new. And your brain's just like, whoa, you know, let's remember this for forever. So all it takes maybe is a sudden drop or a loss of balance, and it just sends your whole body almost back into that situation. And what did that look like when you did that? Did you break down right then and there?
Yeah, I tried my best to like keep composed, but I definitely had tears running down my face because in my mind, I mean, I was at the physical therapy office, but in my mind, I felt like I was like literally behind the wheel. I was flipping. It was all these things. So luckily, my parents were there, and they came and, you know, took me by the hand and helped me get back to the car and ended up just taking me home, and I was done for PT that day. So they talked to the physical therapist on my behalf, and basically, I just had tears running down my face until the episode passed. And so I just kind of sat quietly while I cried, and then it finally ended, and I could rationalize, like, okay, what just happened to me? Like, obviously, that wasn't pleasant, but why did I react that bad to it? And then I realized, oh, yeah, it's PTSD. So,
when did all the rehab finally finish? When were you done?
So, it took a full year. So, then, like, May of the following year of 2020, I was done. And so, I still do a lot of exercises to this day, but all on my own. So it was a full year of rehab, but I try to exercise now like 6 days a week if I can. I do walking, I do biking, I do bodyweight exercises. So normal exercises, but I can't ever return to fitness classes or dancing or anything like that, which is still a real bummer to me personally.
Ever? Why not ever?
My causes knee pain. So I have no or very little cartilage left in the knee, of how they had to repair it. And I'm potentially into partial knee replacements down the line as well. So it's close to bone on bone rubbing. So anytime I do something strenuous, it burns, and the burning will last for like weeks. So I have tried to do a little more intense exercises, and it burns so bad that I have to stop.
Do you swim or anything? I kind of forget the list that you just said. Did you say swimming?
I used to do a lot of swimming. I haven't done it lately, but I kind of need to get back into it. Now that it's warm again, I hate swimming in the winter. Like, that just, it's too cold.
You got not to swim outside.
Well, I know, but I don't know. The indoor pools I've tried around Peoria, I mean, if somebody has a good recommendation, let me know. The ones I've tried have not been ideal. It's pretty cold.
Oh, what the heck? Yeah, that would stink. No one likes swimming in cold water.
Yeah.
Okay, so not big on swimming. You said biking, though, is not too terrible on your knees.
Biking and walking are my two kind of go-to right now for exercise.
Okay. Looking into a knee replacement down the line, I've heard of people saying that a knee replacement, I mean, it's life-changing. They say it's even better than their original knee when it was healthy. You ever think about getting one earlier or sooner?
Yeah, so I guess
later?
It depends on how old that person is. So as a young person, it's a little like spacer that they put in between your knee. And the problem is if you jump too hard, you'll smash the spacer and you're into a new surgery. So like for an older person that doesn't move quickly or doesn't get startled or anything like that, it works fine. But I'm somebody that if I did any sort of like intense, even just doing like a bunch of stairs or something, if I overdo it, you can smash it and you're back to surgery. So it's not really an option for me at my age. The other factor is that they only last 10 years on a young person. So I'd be looking at 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. Like, that's a lot of surgeries plus PT. So that's why I am going to be postponing that for quite some time.
I understand entirely. We need to get some better knee replacement technology, darn it.
Yeah, come
Someone
on.
Someone get on that.
Yeah, let me know.
Well, okay, so in Stepping Up, How Christ Turned My Pain and Suffering into Hope and Joy, available on Amazon, I've heard that it kind of reads like almost like a diary, and that you really logged a lot of your experience as it was happening, and that largely went into this. Why did you do that? Why did you keep something like a diary?
So I actually didn't keep it in real time. I wrote it after the fact, which was kind of interesting. But then I went back and almost wrote it, like you said, as a diary. So back in 2020, when the pandemic was happening, I actually lost my marketing job because I went down to like 10 hours a week. And then with COVID, nobody knew what was happening. And they're like, hey, we can't afford extra staff right now. So I was kind of like out of a job, still kind of rehabilitating. And actually, my Nana had been telling me for weeks, like, you should write a book. Like, you need to write your story. Like, people need to know that are suffering, like, how you got through it. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, I'm not an author. Like, I don't know how to write a book. And the day that my marketing contract ended, I got a note from Deacon Roger, who he was my confirmation teacher and brought me communion each Sunday with his wife. And he sent me a message saying, like, hey, have you started writing your book? Like, you have an important story to tell. And I'm like, well, I guess now I have some free time. So I went back and I wrote the core of my book in 3 days. I did several edits and revisions, of course, but like nonstop for 3 days, I didn't leave like my kitchen table and wrote this book.
Wow. Holy moly. And now let's see, what did you major in again? Or what did you get your graduate degree in at Northwestern?
Yeah. So that's information design and strategy. And then I was a marketing major for undergrad.
Okay. Marketing, say the writing one again.
Information design and strategy.
Information design and strategy.
Yes.
And you do writing related things, correct? And you mix that with marketing. You do writing
exactly
now, right?
Yes. Yes. So it's kind of, I know it's a lot of words, but basically, yeah, I do writing, I do basic design, analytics and analysis. So it all kind of goes hand in hand with creating creative content in a variety of formats.
Got it. In like compelling
ways, yes.
Okay.
That people
okay.
want to engage with.
Do you like writing a lot?
Yeah, I love it. It's my favorite thing to do.
Do you think you might become a writer full time?
Maybe. We'll see what happens, but I would love that. We'll okay. see what doors open.
Got it. Okay. Well, we are getting towards the end of this, Katie, and I want to ask, so sadly, events like yours, they happen to people. They even happen to young people just like you. What would you say to someone who maybe is right now sitting on the hospital bed, they're 24, and they think, why me? what the heck's my future going to look like? What's the point of all this? This life sucks. And they're just down in their luck. Maybe they're depressed. What would you say to them in this moment?
I would say, don't give up. God is with you. He is with you right now. And he's going to get you through this. I don't know what your end result will be. You know, I was able to make a pretty full recovery, minus some knee flare-ups from time to time. I can't tell you what your life is going to be or what your medical outcome is going to be. But God has you there, and he's with you there. And wait for the bright future tomorrow. You might not see things get better immediately for several months, maybe even years, but do not give up hope. Your suffering has meaning. And that's the main thing I want people to know, is suffering is not wasted when you unite it to Jesus. And so please do that and pray and ask him what he wants you to do with this, and know that it's not for nothing and that God sees you during this time.
Mm-hmm. And now a couple more questions here. I'm sorry. What did your prayers look like during the thick of things when they were extra bad?
Yeah, so they were pretty simple. When it was extremely painful, it was, God, help me, or God, take this away, were really my two prayers that I had at the time. Then some Hail Marys or some Glory Bees every now and again. I didn't have conversational prayer for months. I just couldn't muster it. And so my prayer was my suffering, or making the sign of the cross, simple things, or maybe even holding a rosary. Like, I couldn't like have the wherewithal to like say a rosary, just the mental concentration, but holding a rosary. So just a simple action, and God can do a lot with a simple prayer.
Mm-hmm. Who was the most integral part in your successful rehabilitation, would you say?
My mom and my dad. No doubt. They were my anchors when it was just really rough. And they were with me every day in the hospital. They were there with me at home every single day, taking me to appointments. I mean, they didn't leave my side. It was always, one of them was always with me. And I couldn't have gotten through with this without them.
Mm. Wow. It pays to have really good parents. And you know what? Like, your faith, it's tough to have a profound faith like you have without good parenting.
Yeah.
It really is. And so parents, they're incredible. When they're great, they're really great.
Yeah, I'm blessed.
Well, looking back on this whole experience, as terrible as it was, you know, you meet things with grace, and God can help you learn something and grow from just about anything, mm-hmm. just about anything, maybe everything. What do you think you've learned from all of it? And this will be my last question, but...
Sure, the value of redemptive suffering. So suffering, when it's united well to God, can change the course of somebody's trajectory. I mean, when you offer up your suffering, you get souls out of purgatory. You can offer up your suffering for a particular family member. I would say, if somebody has somebody that is gone from God, doesn't believe in God, offer up your daily suffering so that person converts back. My life in particular, I never thought I would be an author. I never thought I would get a book published, and all in my 20s. And I've gotten to meet incredible people through this book. I've gotten to meet people doing amazing things that I would never have met if I never wrote this book. I would have just been living my little ordinary life. And so you don't know how God can use suffering, but there's great value in it. He used the cross. So what does he want to do through you?
Mm, wow. Wow, wow, wow. Stepping Up, How Christ Turned My Pain and Suffering into Hope and Joy. Buy it on Amazon. You want to buy it anywhere else, or is it Amazon's a big thing?
Amazon mainly, or LeGrand Miller if you're local to the Peoria area.
Got it. All right. Well, Katie Crowley, it's really been an honor talking to you. You're an inspiration. Your story is incredible, and you have an incredibly bright future ahead of you. I almost forgot that you're only 27 years old. So, heck of a story. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
The pleasure's all mine, and thank you everyone for watching and listening to The Paul Garcia Show. God bless, and have a great week.